Welcome back to WBUI Presents. Our conversation, Prospects for Peace and Prosperity on the Korean Peninsula, continues with a question about this year's Winter Games in Pyeongchang. Moderator Andy Downs will speak next, followed by political science professor James Lutz.
Obviously, early in 2018, we had the Olympics in South Korea, and there was an awful lot of attention to what seemed to be warming relations between North and South Korea. In fact, we saw North Korean athletes come to participate. Some of the teams were actually combined teams, a hockey team, for example. People refer to this as the charm offensive from North Korea. The United States interacted with this charm offensive by having Vice President Pence, Mike Pence, at the Olympics. And instead of even turning around and interacting with the North Korean delegation behind him, he sat and looked forward and didn't interact at all. Was this a good idea to not engage in any way, shape, or form with North Korea?
I would say no. It was an opportunity for informal engagement, which oftentimes sets the stage. In the case of the People's Republic of China, it was ping-pong diplomacy. So here was an opportunity to interact with a relative of the leader in a way that would not necessarily send a political message as such. It would not be construed as the vice president talking to a North Korean official. It would be a visiting American dignitary talking to a visiting North Korean dignitary of some sort. And there might have been an opportunity to at least begin to establish a dialogue. And I think this was even counterproductive, because not only was it an opportunity missed, it was missed in a very obvious way, which made it an affront in some respects to North Korea to do it in that fashion.
And to take it a step further, it was even a social event. This was not even a formal event. This was two people running, I don't want to say running into each other, but they were at a sporting event where people were obviously going to be having a good time and watching the opening ceremonies, et cetera.
Not Fidel Castro, but Raul Castro and President Obama meeting in South Africa in a informal setting. And that surely didn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, things obviously have taken a rather dramatic turn now, because what we see is an invitation through the South Korean leaders to President Trump to engage in a meeting. And so we've gone from not even having a meeting of two individuals, not the official leaders of the countries, to the prospect of the two leaders of the countries sitting down. Jamie, how unusual is this?
It's very unusual. No sitting U.S. president has met a sitting North Korean leader, and so this would break all precedent and would be a big development.
But even the process, the fact that the discussions would begin with the leaders talking with one another, is unusual.
Yeah, that's very unusual. So of course, the normal way to do this is to begin with lower level talks, and then gradually work your way up with people of increasing expertise and, crucially, increasing authority to sort of make some decisions on their own without having to check back to their capital cities all the time, culminating, if successful, over the course of months or years, in a summit meeting between two leaders where they hammer out or try to hammer out remaining differences. I mean, that's the classic, of course, right, diplomatic process. So this inverts that, right? So if President Trump goes there and meets with Kim Jong-un, they'll be starting with nothing on the table. And, who knows? It could be very interesting, but given the incredible complexity of the relationship between the U.S. and North Korea, of the North Korean nuclear program, and of sort of North Asian political dynamics in general, it's very hard to believe that, in a short series of meetings between two leaders, they can somehow reach agreement. I mean, there's no prospect of that. The question is how well or badly this meeting between these two highly unusual leaders is gonna play out.
Theoretically, maybe the broad framework laid out, and then let others come in to work out the details.
Yeah, I mean, sure. The best case is that the two go and meet one another and hit it off to some degree, and establish some sort of broad framework. Here are the things we're gonna start working on. We're gonna start working on these. We're gonna defer these until later. we reach understanding on some principle, even if it's very vague, the principle of sort of a peaceful Northeast Asia, or, you know, maybe get a little more specific than that, whatever it is, or just on some wording that can sort of characterize the relationship and you know, maybe a set of broad guiding principles. That could be very good, and then say, okay, now we'll send it to our diplomats to start a long process of negotiation. Mm-hmm. But I think nobody should expect anything close to an actual agreement that would be at all sticking to come out of this meeting.
Now, before we get too far into what might come from the meeting, let's talk a little bit about what we think may have caused the meeting to happen. As has been mentioned, the quality of life in North Korea is not particularly good. There is this now threat of nuclear devastation all around. There are some things that have changed here. What do you think has contributed most to the fact that the invitation was even issued, let alone accepted?
Well, it's a little unclear if there was an actual invitation. It was perhaps a suggestion from North Korea to South Korea, which may have been intended as a preliminary step, and it was mentioned by a South Korean who was present in Washington, D.C., which was then perceived to be an open invitation by President Trump, who responded very quickly to that. And, of course, now there's been a little bit of pushback into terms of that initially it was going to be a meeting with no preconditions. Well, now we have to have preconditions. And so what might have led to it, it might have been a preliminary move in what would have been the more normal diplomatic practice, where you send out a feeler through back channels, which you do not necessarily expect to become public.
And so formally accepted.
Yes.
Jamie?
Yeah, well, you know, another thing probably at work here is that I think the North Korean regime thought that it could sort of, it could play upon, let's say, Donald Trump's strengths, weaknesses, whatever, right, play upon his personality to try something different and unusual. It's worth noting that for decades, the North Korean regime has desired this. What it has wanted for decades was a summit meeting between its leader and the U.S. leader to show North Korea being, in many respects, really some respects, the equal of the United States. And every president, Democratic or Republican, going back years, has said, we're not going to give them that gift. And here, right away, we gave them what they wanted. So it may have been just a decision by the North Koreans, hey, let's see if this thing will actually work. And now, at least by Donald Trump saying that he'd be happy to meet, it at least seems to be. Now, whether they actually will end up meeting is a different thing, as Jim said. But this is something the North Koreans have wanted for a long time, and we gave it to them with no preconditions attached.
But if the meeting doesn't happen now, what are the possible negative ramifications of that? I mean, there's been a big, in terms of the United States, President Trump has said, we're meeting, although there's been some, you know, discussion about what that really means. If there is no meeting, what's it mean for him? If there's no meeting, what's it mean for North Korea? I mean, is this the mutually assured destruction version of meetings? There will definitely be a meeting, because if there isn't, something bad is going to happen?
There have been attempts at meetings amongst world leaders in the past in a variety of contexts, some of which have never come off. And what usually, if there is a decision not to have the meeting, usually there is some face-saving way of exiting from the potential for the meeting. This might be a bit more difficult given President Trump and Kim Il-sung as well. I mean, that's the personalities are such that what is the normal diplomatic practice may not work so well in this case.
That's an interesting question, because we do have two individuals who are not exactly known for diplomatic statements. I mean, they have basically called each other names and these sorts of things. It's hard to imagine either of them sort of letting the other save face. In fact, you almost expect a new round of name calling or reviving old names if something does not happen here. Well, let's talk. Let's be optimistic. Let's hope that the meetings are going to happen, that good things will happen. What do you think could be the most positive outcome of a meeting between these two leaders? Jim, we'll start with you.
Well, one would probably, the most positive outcome would be to find some way to increase social, cultural, and economic contacts between the North and the South, which would draw the North into the orbit of the global social, economic, and cultural system is as a long-term approach. And that's probably the best way to smooth the rough edges around the North Korean regime and to force it, just as China was forced to change as it became involved in the global, particularly the global economic system, but in other respects as well, that it's a process, and South Korea would be the obvious best choice of doing that rather than the United States doing something directly, the United States supporting South Korea to do it. I think that would probably be the best outcome to be hoped for, the most productive in the long term.
And really, it's a sort of localized then, too. There's no worry about stretching resources too far. It's actually getting back maybe to the complementary economic arrangement that existed previously. Jamie, what do you think the most positive outcome could be?
Yeah, I agree with Jim that that's a very plausible that's among the most plausible outcomes. I think we need to be really very cautious about you know, what positive outcomes might come from this meeting, or even from a process that this meeting begins, right? The best case is, as we said earlier, that this meeting begins a process of serious negotiation between the two sides. But even then, I would say it's far too optimistic to expect that even that longer-term process will result in North Korea's giving up its nuclear weapons. I think, you know, I think that we all need to get used to the idea that North Korea has nuclear weapons and will have nuclear weapons for quite a long time to come, and that there is no military way or diplomatic way in the short to medium term of getting those of having those weapons disappear. And the North Korean regime time again has dangled this idea of getting rid of its nuclear weapons and never followed through on it. And this goes, remember, North Korea's had nuclear weapons for over a decade now. You know, that the crisis has ratcheted up in the past year or so, but this is no longer a new issue. And North Korea may have as many as 60 nuclear warheads. So so I don't think that we can be at all sanguine about what's going to happen here. We need, I think, to become used to living with the North Korean nuclear threat, rightly or wrongly. It's just, I think, I will be happy to be proven wrong.
Well, I'd like to point out to everyone, I asked what the positive outcomes were, and Jamie went to nuclear weapons. Sheena, bring us back to a positive outcome. What do you think those positive outcomes could be here?
The South Korean opinion about the positive outcome is vary, depending on the age group and depending on whether they are from North Korea. You know, the during the Korean War, there's many of them came down as refugees. Mm-hmm. The urge for unification is declining, some people concerned. I think the most general opinion about from South Koreans that the some peaceful coexistence that could be economic through the economic cooperation and also allowing different political systems, federation or something like that. There are many things, but main theme I'm hearing is that they entice North Koreans to come to the world, come out from there. Through the outside contact, they will get to know, they will just softening up little bit, little by little, not overnight.
One of the potential difficulties here, though, is obviously North Korea's economy is in bad shape compared to South Korea's economy. If things were to open up between the two, you know, I'm sure will be plenty of people who will be concerned that there will be a massive rush of folks from North Korea into South Korea. Is that a huge issue? Is that something that people really should be thinking about or getting concerned about? Sheena, what do you think?
I think the South Koreans are very aware of that, the German case, and that was a very expensive. But what is the cost of war then, and in alternative?
Then, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the German case is instructive. In only 1 year, Germany reunited after the end of communist rule, and I think my understanding is that South Koreans are very wary of doing anything anywhere remotely to that quickly. Now, again, I don't think we're going to see any big change anytime soon, but Andy, you scolded me for being negative in my last comment, so I'll be more positive now and say
Thank you.
In keeping with what both Jim and Sheena have said, the good news, I think, is that international engagement really does open up authoritarian regimes. It can take a long time, but it works. We saw it in Eastern Europe. We saw it in the former Soviet Union. We have definitely seen it in a robust way with the opening of China over the last 30 years. And we also have seen it in Cuba, not so much from U.S. efforts, but from European efforts over a long time, and then Barack Obama's effort for about a year. And so when you sort of are able to sort of pry open regimes a bit and have more business contacts, economic contacts, you know, person-to-person meetings, et cetera, then authoritarian rule has a harder time surviving. So over the course of time, you know, it may take a decade, it may take two decades, whatever. It's not going to take just 1 year as it did or less in the German case. I think that that can be good news, but we have to be patient.
And this is not a perpetual incline. There are moments where it's going to, for example,
two steps
in China,
forward, one step back.
President for life being an example China of what some might consider to be a step backwards right now. Now, Jamie, I scolded you for being negative, and normally I ask the negative question first, which might be why you answered it that way. What are the great dangers to the meeting? The bad things that could come out because of it, do you think?
Well, I think the big danger is if the meeting goes ahead, that Trump and Kim clash and don't get along. Because I think that if Donald Trump decides that Kim is the problem, then we all have a big problem, because there's no way to get rid of Kim, and we know that Donald Trump often takes sort of personal relations very seriously. He's sensitive to personal slights. He tends to really like some people and dislike others intensely. And so I think we would run the risk, especially given the characteristics of President Trump, that this relationship becomes even more polarized because it's become highly personalized at the leader-to-leader level. May not happen that way. Who knows? They might hit it off a bit. I mean, we know too that Donald Trump has admired certain strongmen, I think it would be fascinating if this meeting took place and we were given any insight into how it actually went.
You're not going to be there?
I don't think. No, they haven't yet.
Oh, no. That's a shame. Sheena, what do you think the big negative could be if this meeting goes poorly?
I think Jamie just very nicely, yes.
Jim, anything else you want to add to that?
I think the difficult relationships between North Korea and the United States could escalate, which would make the possibility of a misstep or misperception much greater.
Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us. That's Jim Lutz and James Toole from the Department of Political Science at IPFW, as well as Sheena Choi from the Department of Management and Marketing. This has been a discussion about the prospects for peace and prosperity on the Korean Peninsula, brought to you by the Department of Political Science, as well as the American Democracy Project here at IPFW. I want to once again thank College TV, the library here at IPFW, the Helmke Library, and WBOI for helping us bring this to you. Thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you for listening to this episode of WBOI Presents. You can find this discussion and other episodes of this program on our website at wboi.org. Folktales is next. Have a wonderful night.